And welcome back. Sometimes I say things like, beware, prepare. Well, we're running out of time. I don't know how much time there is left, but as I mentioned earlier, one of my guests back in 2001 did a lot of work. Very, very smart guy. Wrote a book called The Cassandra Conspiracy. Think of it, that's what it was. And he said that the Bible and the Mayan calendar, by his calculations, both pointed to 2023, and the Bible mentions, I guess, Daniel, that December 24th, 2023. Now, I don't like to do this kind of discussion, frankly. I don't like to make predictions. I don't. But I'm just saying that that's what was laid out on this program 22 years ago, that December 24th of 2023 appeared in this gentleman's calculations, computations, projections, prognostications to be the time for big trouble, as in war. And what's going to happen to the 2.3 million human beings in Gaza who are being savaged in full view of the world like nothing since World War II? Nothing. And no one is doing a thing about it. Talks cheap. No one dares do a thing about it against that brave little democracy in the Middle East, because that brave little democracy has already, in all likelihood, told all the Arab nations, if you do anything, you will be nuked. You're gone. They've got 500-600 nukes. So it's really up to all of you and wherever you're living in the world now. This is common sense. If you're in the southern hemisphere, you could still pay, and you will pay, if there's a nuclear exchange, a major one, in the northern hemisphere. The whole air circulates around the planet in like 2 or 3 days, something like that. It moves all the time. So radiation will be carried everywhere. So prepare and beware. Put food away. One of the world's great authorities on the idea of preparing is Stefan Verstappen, who in Canada has put together his own community of people who are now trained, if that's the right word. They're certainly ready for anything that'll come along as best as a community of people can be. It's not thoroughly too late to get out in the next few weeks, if we've got that, and I hope we do, and buy food and other vital issues. If you don't have a source of clean water, a Berkey water filter, for example, for water and food, you're in trouble. You're going to be like the people in Gaza. Feed me. Who's going to feed them? Who's going to feed you? Anyhow, Stefan is back tonight. Hello, Stefan. Sorry for rambling on there a little bit.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm still here. Thank you.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And we're both surprised by that.
To a degree. That's very true. It's obviously going to hit the fan here, Stefan. Something's going to happen. They're not backing down in the Middle East at all, the Zionist state. They're just slaughtering these people nonstop, and no one's stopping them.
I can't believe that they're getting away with it. Well, no, I can't believe they're getting away with it. They run everything, so... They run the media, they run America, they run Canada and France and Germany and England and Spain.
That's it.
And
geopolitics and entertainment is their domain. They own, and financial, of course, above all.
Yep, they run all the central banks in every country, so they can get away with whatever the hell they want.
Right.
But really, people should be speaking out. I mean, as I've spoken about this a couple of times. People ask me how I feel about it, and it's... Listen, I'm not, like, on anybody's side on this, but I remember way back already starting when the Internet started to become popular. When was that, about 1995?
Around that.
Yeah, around there, right? And already I would remember seeing all these videos of the Israelis really abusing the Palestinians with their roadblocks and picking them up and kidnapping them and beating them in the streets.
Kicking them, beating them up, killing them, shooting them in the knees. It's been gone on for decades, and people wonder why Hamas might have attacked Israel. Well, we know it was a setup now and a false flag type of an attack, but yeah. In any case, you get the rage. You can't do that to human beings for decades and not expect something. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I remember thinking, you know, if they did that to me, I would,
right.
You know, I would have a seething hatred for them, and I would spend the rest of my life trying to figure out a way I could hurt them back. So I'm surprised it hasn't happened, to be honest with you.
Right, right.
Yeah, listen, shoot my dog. I would dedicate the rest of my life to killing you. I would.
Understood. I understand that.
If it's the last thing I do, I'll get the son of a bitch. Thank goodness nobody shot my dog, but...
Right. I thoroughly understand.
You know, yeah. So what do you want to talk about tonight, Jeff?
Oh, let's talk about dogs. Dogs and cats, but they're different. Dogs represent the kindness and devotion with no questions asked that people in their highest state of being should be like. And that unconditional love, you don't find that in human beings. Rarely. Mm-hmm. It's there, but it's not something that's common at all. And so, yes, dogs are just, it's like they're around to try to teach us a lesson. But we as a species don't seem to be able to grasp what the teaching is all about. You just don't have it. Anyway, go ahead. So, yeah.
I was watching a couple of those near-death experiences where they come back and they tell you what they've seen. And
I was watching a couple, too, this last week. Interesting.
Yeah. See, great minds think alike. And and a few of them said, well, you know, there was my family members that had died and before me, and they were there to greet me. And I'm thinking, I don't want that to happen. My family members were a bunch of assholes. So I don't want to go, you know, if I die, I don't want to see them again. I was glad when they dropped dead, and I don't want to hear or see them again. So if I die and there they are, I'm going to be very disappointed and upset. But what
it's true,
I would
though.
Want...
You're correct. I get it.
Yeah, my mother was a pathological narcissist, and my father was an absentee father. I don't know what he was. I just never liked the guy. I don't know why, even since I was a little kid. He left when I was six, so anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to ask me, what would be my vision of heaven? And that would be by the lake with all my dogs. I've had many dogs in my life. I love dogs, Jeff. They're just the most amazing animals. They all have their own personality. They're a lot smarter than people give them credit for. And for me, what I'd want to do is see all my dogs and all my cats too. So that would be like me and 8 dead cats and 8 dogs, you know. But
well, I hope that is the case, and that they are living eternally. I lost mine 3 years ago this month, and I haven't gotten over it yet.
No.
I know. And people say, well, get another dog. Oh, my God, they missed the point entirely. That's not, it doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't work that way. I know. I buried my last 2 cats. Out here behind where I live, there's a ravine. There's a little creek. So I buried them on a sunny hill, you know. Gave them a Viking send-off. I buried them with their dinner bowl wrapped in their favorite blankets. Some food into their dinner bowl. And their favorite cat toy.
That's important. You did the right thing.
I don't know. I'm a sentimental old fool, Jeff. That's the problem.
Nothing wrong with sentimental thinking and acting, because that's ultimately kindness almost every time. Kindness.
It's me giving
respect.
This is
not a kind world anymore.
Oh, geez, I don't know what's happened, Jeff. You know, it's so sad as I get older, and the world I grew up in is gone.
And the young people today will never know what we experienced, and many of you listening experienced. They'll never know, except maybe in an old movie. That's as close as they're ever going to get to it.
I know, and which is tragic, to be honest with you.
It is.
And I feel for young people today. I really feel for them. And people of my generation, I'll often scold them. I said, you know, this is the world you left for your children. Are you happy about that? Because they will curse your name for what we've done to the world. But not we, because I never did anything. I've always been a fighter for freedom and a fighter for good. You know, I was one of the first members of Greenpeace.
I didn't know that. It was still a reasonably honorable organization, I guess, before it was taken over by big business. Or was it just founded by the internationalists to begin with? I don't know. But
I don't think so. Bob Hunter was the founder, and he seemed like a reasonable guy. They did a lot of good the first 5 years they were in operation. And, well, then they got subverted and turned into the green, and now the climate boiling crowd.
Right. You know, let me tell this again, just for fun, it's short. They've done ice core sampling, I guess Greenland perhaps, somewhere. They've gone down deep enough to get back millions of years, and they've mapped out what the climate was like over these last several million years. And if you look at a graph in your mind's eye, moving from left to right, it starts out about, let's say, halfway up was the mean temperature, and that mean temperature over the millennia has begun to drop and drop and drop and drop and drop. It has gone nothing but little fits and starts here and there, but it's gone down to a very low level. I think three degrees lower than it was average several million years ago, something like that. And it's just inched up a little tiny bit at the bottom. So any increase in temperature is simply moving back up to the way it traditionally was. We're way low. That's a fact. So
that is a fact. We're technically still on the tail end of an ice age.
Correct. That's what it showed. That's right.
Yeah. And when they first came out with this, because years ago it was global freezing, which is probably more likely. We're probably going back into a little mini ice age. And then it went into global warming, and I'm thinking, living in Canada, I'd appreciate an extra couple of degrees, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. But as a student of history, those times in the last 2,000 years, 2,500 years, when the temperature did go up, like 1 or 2 degrees, it didn't cause the end of the world. You know, now you hear these people talk.
No, it's not going to. No, it's all, that's all lies.
It's all lies.
Throughout history, I'm talking about billions of years of history, 4.5. The planet's been relatively stable the whole time, aside from the very beginning when it was in its cooling state. But yeah, go ahead.
So as a student of history, for the last 2,500 years, we've had like two warming periods, and they always corresponded with a golden age, because it makes sense. If the temperature goes up a couple of degrees, then your crops have a greater chance of surviving. You open up more agricultural land where you can grow things. For example, during the Bronze Age, which was really one of the high points of human civilization, they were growing grapes in England. Now you can't grow grapes in England, but then they were. And the other slightly warm period was just in time for the Renaissance. But before that, we went through a couple of cold periods. And during the cold periods, people starved to death by the tens of millions. So if the temperature goes up 1 or 2 degrees, that is a good thing, because more food and an easier life for everybody. And the ocean, ocean levels did not rise. You know, people are morons, right, Jeff? You can take an ice cube, put it in the glass, and when the ice cube melts, guess what? The level of water stays the same, right? Because, you know, ice displaces the same amount of volume as liquid does. And so if you melt an ice cube, your glass does not overflow. And so everybody thinking that, oh, if it goes up a degree or two, the polar caps will melt, and suddenly we've got, you know, an extra 300 feet of water. No, it doesn't work that way. Even if the ice caps melted, it wouldn't increase the level of the oceans. But anyways, people are idiots, Jeff. They know nothing about history. They know nothing about science. And so they believe the propaganda.
They always do. If they're told to believe it, you know, most of them will line right up.
Yeah.
How's the little community doing up there? Anything new?
Not too much new, because now we're heading into winter. It's more busy in the, or it's busier in the spring and summer, because we have the garden team and we do a lot of gardening. We're back to placing orders with our food co-op. So we buy our food in bulk from a farmer's distribution center, and all the food is grown locally, you know. And the minimum order is $500. So easy for us to meet. We got 100 people in the community. Everybody puts in an order for a $30 box or a $50 box. But one of the members last night was just saying that, you know, she's got a family of four, and she typically pays about $600 for groceries every 2 weeks, Jeff. That's what the cost of food is up here in Canada.
$1,200 a month. Oh,
it's a mortgage payment to feed yourself, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she says, but with the food co-op, the money she pays into the food co-op, now instead of $600 every 2 weeks, it's about $300. So half your food cost. Mm-hmm. That's why folks get together, work together. A food co-op is just people pooling their money in order to buy in bulk. And right, there's websites, and there's food distribution warehouses all over America, all over Canada. You just got to look it up on the website. Like I said, the catch is you have to have a minimum order, like $500. So you get your neighbors together, and you all kick in $50. And here, they deliver the food to your house. So we put in the order, and they deliver all the food to my friend's house, Dixie. And then everybody goes over to Dixie's house that ordered a box, and they pick up their food and cut your grocery bills in half. I can't imagine why everybody's not doing this, because who can afford $1,200 a month in groceries?
I can't even fathom that for the average family. That's why they're living on their credit cards now. They can't do that very much longer. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. So, again, one of the reasons why I'm always promoting folks form communities, work together. So everybody just does their own thing. Okay, great. Pay double for your groceries. But if you can cooperate, then you could cut your bills in half. And now with the massive inflation that we see everywhere, it's more important than ever to form buying groups. So that's one thing. So we started up the buying groups. We slacked off a bit over the summer because our own gardens were bringing in so much produce. So that was free. you know, everyone puts in a couple hours a week to tend the garden. And then we started harvesting in end of July, August. And so, excuse me, everyone is, you know, got a lot of their groceries for free by working on the communal garden. Again, the point of getting together with the community folks. I was talking to a friend the other day, and he says, well, you know, I've been trying to garden, but my garden's not working out. I'm a failure as a gardener. I said, well, that's why you need a community. Me, personally, I'm not a gardener, Jeff. I'm not. It's the least of my survival skills is gardening. I said, but the good news is, in our community, we have 10 farmers. They know everything about when to plant and how to plant and how to fertilize the soil and what to do to get rid of the bugs. And so, well, when you've got 10 farmers working with you,
right,
and they know what they're doing, and we got horticulturalists. My friend Dixie specializes in forest gardens. So Forest gardening is where you turn your backyard into a forest. You plant all kinds of different plants. Her own backyard is amazing. She's got, you know, apple trees and pear trees and blueberry bushes and strawberry bushes and corn and grapes.
Sounds like a fine person. Anybody named Dixie's got to be a good person. That's a great name.
Well, she's my best friend. Well, she's my daughter.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, I officiated at her wedding. Did I tell you that?
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah, no. They asked me. They said, oh, we want you to officiate the wedding because they got married at the end of July. Uh-huh. And want you to officiate. I said, what the hell is officiates? I didn't know what that means. I hate weddings, Jeff. Come on.
They usually end up in a terrible disaster sooner or later, most of them.
Why are you celebrating? It's the end of your life. And listen, her and her current husband lived together for 2 years, or 10 years, and they already had two kids. So I said, I made a joke. I said, I'd still prefer you guys to date a little bit longer just to make sure. But anyway, okay. So yeah, I did the ceremony, and then I recruited three other people from the community, professional musicians. They played the Philharmonic, a violinist and a cellist and a bass player. We played music at the wedding.
Class.
And the wedding was held at the farm of, again, another member of our community. Beautiful property. Oh, my God, they're so lucky. I'm so jealous, Jeff, that they got such a beautiful property. What they did was they bought a property. It's like a farmhouse that was owned by a former Jewish drug dealer. And he'd spent a lot of money to fix up the property into sort of like countryside, you know, orgy getaway, whatever, right?
No, I understand. I got it. No, they profited.
Right. You know what I'm talking about,
nice,
right?
To hear that they got it.
So they got a big house and a pool and a couple of extra houses, you know, tiny houses on the property. Anyways, they bought it at a power of sale. Got a really good deal on it. So we had the wedding there, beautiful property, and anyways, the latest thing with the community is...
Let me do this. Hold on a sec. I got to take a break. Stefan will do that and come back and get an update on the community. And I think a lot of you out there know what we're talking about, and you'll want to hear this. Be right back with Stefan. Okay, welcome back. Talking with Stefan Verstappen and the little magical community he has put together with his friends up there is something that it captured a lot of imagination out here. Go ahead, Stefan. How are things in the community, given the world crises we're seeing, and it doesn't look like they're going to be reversed before it's too late, unfortunately?
Yeah, so I know maybe some of the listeners think I'm a little bit boring talking about my community, and I'm always referring to it, but folks, this is the way to go. The reason I'm always talking about the community is because I'm hoping to inspire you to do the same, because the benefits of being a part of a team, being a part of a community, it's humongous. There's so many benefits. The food co-op is just one small example. And we also do ongoing training. So we have people come in to teach us how to use the ham radio. We got people come in, teach us how to grow crops. We have people come in, teach us how to make medicinal medicine from herbs and how to source those herbs from the environment. And so 2 weeks ago, I did a workshop on the bug out bag. Still seems to be some people aren't too clear about bugging out, when to bug out, when to shelter in place. And we've already had a couple of workshops on the bug out bag. One of the other girls brought in her bug out bag, but my bug out bag, my bug out bag is bugging out for war. So I've got way more stuff in my bag than anybody else does. So let me run people through my thought process, why I've ended up here. So about 25 years ago, I figured out that our society was coming to an end. That's probably when you figured it out too, eh, Jeff?
Yeah.
We knew this was coming. So, okay, I'm thinking, well, what's the problem? What is the major source of our misery? Well, major source number one, there's several, but the first one we can point to is our own government. Everybody's government is the source and the cause of 80% of the misery in the world. Okay, so what can we do? How can we stop this from happening? Well, let's go down the list. We can vote. We can vote our way out of this.
Who says this?
Idiots say that.
I'm sure there's some therapy available for those people somehow, but
I don't know. Maybe some medicine. Maybe Pfizer's got something for them.
I don't know. That's pretty grim.
Yeah, it's pretty grim. Oh, so, you know, we know that doesn't work. Oh, well, how about we start our own political party? There in the States, it would be the third party. Here in Canada, we already got five. Spain has got like 7 or 9 parties.
You could start 20 and it wouldn't make any difference. The system is beyond salvation. I'm speaking for myself, not Stefan. It's done.
No, but
it's cooked. It's corrupted beyond belief.
Yep, that's exactly my sentiments as well, Jeff. Doesn't matter. You start another political party. There's another one. People are kind of milling about. They want to start another one called the Canada Party. They don't stand a chance in hell of getting any power. So voting doesn't work. Starting another party is not going to work. Okay, how about protesting? That'll change things.
Yeah.
Let's all walk down the street with a sign. So I'm sure you agree, Jeff. Protesting does nothing. It's not going to change anything.
No, especially when it doesn't occur. I'm not seeing any protesting down here. Once in a while, a little thing here, a little thing there. But no, look, the Vietnam War was stopped through protests, mass protests that actually did work. But the people don't have it anymore. They're not going to do it.
I was just going to say, you know, I remember as a teenager, you know, the Vietnam War ended when I was 14. But, I remember the huge peace protests that went on at that time. But now, you know, with the Ukraine war and the Israeli Hamas war, where's the peace protests? Can't be found. But protesting doesn't do any good anymore anyways, right? Agreed?
Nope, I agree.
Okay, so that leaves then writing letters to your congressman. I have to laugh because all these suggestions
they're beyond out of touch with reality. They're just gone. There's nothing there. We don't have those avenues anymore. They're not functional. They've been taken over, co-opted, blocked, diverted, whatever. The media is reality for most people. Not all, most people. What they see on that flat screen is their reality. They don't think, they don't interact with nature anymore. Very few people do. What your group up there is doing is like almost like a Hollywood fantasy movie now. It's great to hear, and I wish there were more.
Well, that's why, you know, I promote and I talk about it all the time because, folks, it is possible.
Yeah.
You can do it, too. That's why, you know, I talk about it all the time. It is possible that we can organize. So what does that leave us, Jeff. If we don't find a way of surviving what's coming, and by surviving, I mean living a good, happy life surrounded by happy, intelligent, loving people. I don't mean surviving like I sometimes joke when people say, well, what will you do? I say, well, I'll live in a sewer and come out at night to hunt humans for food. But that's not the kind of survivor I'm talking about. I'm right. not talking about sitting in a bunker with your 10-year supply of food and shooting everybody that walks up the driveway. That's not survival. That's desperation. What I'm talking about survival is building autonomous, separate, parallel societies mm-hmm. that will provide all of the modern amenities that we have now, even during a grid down, power out, World War III scenario. So that's why, well, before that, I was, teaching people how to be a prepper. And I was always talking about, prepping. Mm-hmm. I've kind of stopped focusing too much on that because, listen, folks, if you're not prepped by now, like Jeff says, maybe we got till December, then you still got a month, 6 weeks to go out and get as much as you can, stockpile it, 6 months worth of food, minimum people, and medicine, minimum. Water, fresh water.
Minimum.
And get that together now. So number one priority is make sure you and your family can survive. Food, water, medicine, firearms, ammunition, radios. Okay. Now, once you've checked that off, then the next thing is you got to form a community. Because you cannot survive alone. One man cannot survive this. I don't care how much food and ammunition, all the supplies in the world. I don't care if you got a completely functional bunker, whatever. You cannot do it all by yourself. And you can't do it if you're just one family. You're too vulnerable. The whole point being part of a community is to support each other when you can't do it alone. Like I said, I'm not a good gardener. But that's okay. I work in the garden with the rest of the community. I hoe the soil and I'll help weed it and water it. I don't know what I'm doing, but I don't have to because I got 10 people there that know what they're doing. So you can't do it all by yourself. And that's why I'm keep saying, if you're going to get through this.
You know what first, you've done, Stefan? You've kind of reinvented tribal life of, 5,000 years ago. Tribes
yes.
used to have that. Small tribes, 50 to 100 yes. people maybe. There were specialists yep. in all the areas they needed. They had their medicine man or their therapist, whatever. They had all kinds of things. It was all segmented out, but they all came together and made a whole cohesive tribe. And that's what you've done. How many are in your group altogether? 30, was it? 35, 40?
No, we've got approximately 100 people now.
Oh, there you go. There's a tribe.
That's a tribe. I sometimes call it neo-tribalism.
It works. That's what
and,
it is.
But, folks, listen, if you want to live through what's coming, number one, be a prepper. I know Jeff's a prepper. I'm pretty sure Jeff's got machine guns at every window set up in advance. But once you've become a prepper, you've got food and water and all that, the next thing is to create your own tribe. And let me just distinguish one thing. We do not all live together. It's not a commune. Our tribe is set up on the mutual aid, the fraternal system, whereby everybody lives in their own house or their own apartment.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that you come together to tend the garden. It's you come together.
Well, it's the opposite of a cult.
It's the opposite of a cult.
A commune. Yeah. No, no, no.
Yeah, you know, I've researched a lot of the cults and communes, and it's kind of funny. I've spoken to a lot of people that went there, and they said, "Oh yeah, well, this guy had a farm, and he invited everybody to go live on the farm." So they all went there, and they set up a tent, and he comes out the next morning. Okay, you go and do this. You go and do that. Suddenly, he became the boss.
The boss.
This is what happens when you have these communes. There's always one guy that thinks they're the Lord and Master. And in my writings on how to form a community, nobody is the Lord and Master. There is no such thing. Everybody has an equal say in how the communities run. There's no, he's the leader of the community. Well, you know, we have lots of leaders. We have leaders in the medical team. We have leaders in the garden team. We have leaders in the communication team. But there's not one person or a couple of people that run everything. It is a true democracy in that everybody has an equal say in what we do as a community. And you don't get that when everybody lives on a commune. One or two people always dominates, and once they dominate, then because of human nature or whatever, it always becomes a tyranny. So that's why I keep promoting this, is because you can help each other out, and it's not a horror show like a commune would be. And so you have your own autonomy. It's just that, you know, for things like food buying and buying in bulk and buying in groups, look, you're saving, you're cutting your bills in half. Number one, if you don't do anything else, if you don't start a security team and you don't start a gardening team and you don't start a communications team, okay, fine. At least get together and buy your food in bulk. There are people in England that buy their home heating oil in bulk. You know, they all used to have, everybody has their container, their oil storage in the back, and they'd buy it independently. But there was like 20 houses. They pooled their money, and they bought the entire tanker truck, and they filled everybody up. And again, the cost was half.
For sure. Got it.
Reduce your grocery bill. Reduce your home heating bill. Do that at least. You know, and I'm pretty sure most people listening would be pretty happy if they could cut their grocery bill in half.
That's a brilliant idea. Get enough homes together where you can order up a tanker of fuel oil, and figure out how much you'd need. Get that tanker trip, go right to the wholesale outlet, and you can arrange it, and they'll bring it right there. You may have to assist in individual deliveries somehow, but buy the truck. That's great.
Very simple. Yeah, buy the truckload, not by the bucket load.
By the house load. No, yeah. That's very good. That's good.
So, and there's other ways you can do this. You know, let's say you want to build fences and you need lumber, but, you know, a few of your neighbors want to build fences too, or decks or something like that. Again, pool your money, buy the lumber in bulk. The sellers are happy to deliver it to your place. And again, the savings are immense. So with people that are having difficulty forming communities, I tell them, okay, I know. Like, the purpose of our community is survival. It's mutual aid, but what we intend to do is reproduce for ourselves everything that society once provided and no longer does. Food, medicine, security, communications. So we're doing that for ourselves. It sounds complicated, but it's not. It's really not. It's pretty easy. Do I know everything about the ham radio? No. But we got five people that know everything about the ham radio, and they train the rest of us, and they set it up, and we all, you know, we do a radio test every Sunday night at 7 o'clock. And I'll get on the ham radio. Stefan in the house. Yep, I'm here. Okay. And So you've got other people to do that. But now, it seems intimidating when I try to explain this to people. Oh, wow, you got to do this. You got to do, you know, your own agriculture, your own water purification, your own community. Yes, but again, you delegate all those duties out. When you have 50 people, and I came up with a self-assessment questionnaire. It's 75 mm-hmm. questions. When it comes to medicine, do you know first aid? Do you know herbal medicine? Have you ever worked in a hospital? So on and so on. So I asked 75 questions in five different areas. Are you good at building? Are you good at electronics? Are you good at sewing clothes? You know, listing all the skills that you're good at. Mm-hmm. And so we had all the members fill out this questionnaire and then score yourself. So I score, me personally, I score like 15 in under the medical, because I that's my specialty, sort of. But I only score like 5 in gardening. Okay. So now we know I should be on the medical team, and I am. But I'm also a martial artist and a gun owner, and I score about 12 on the security section, so I'm also on the security team. Great. But when you look at the results of our questionnaire, from 100 people, Jeff, we got people that can do everything, anything, that have knowledge, everything from how to give injections, how to farm, how to fix a car, how to set up a windmill, how to raise sheep. I mean, we have people that know what they're doing in all those areas, and we've got it listed in our questionnaires. So if we have a need, we go, wait a minute, who's good? What, Heinrich? Heinrich is really good at, let's call Heinrich, and he'll come by and he'll do things that we need done. So this is how we pool not only our money and resources, but our skills and our knowledge. We pool it together. So that's the point of all of this, is to you know, make sure that you can survive. Doesn't matter. The government can go to the electronics. World War III, doesn't matter. We're ready for it. And so it sounds intimidating to people that I first talked to it. They think, oh, there's a lot of work to do. It's not that much work, Jeff. It's not. We go to a weekly meeting for 2 hours, and then we volunteer an extra 2, 3, 4 hours a week, either in the garden or fixing something. We have a clubhouse, and last season we built an outhouse.
Very good.
Compost.
Yeah, we're running out of time, Stefan. Hold on. I want to make this clear to everyone. If you are interested in what you're hearing here, Stefan has guidance. He's got you have a book or a booklet on it, at least. What else do you have? People can get in touch with you and find out about this. You've got a guide, some kind of a guide.
Yes, I got the booklet is almost done. It's about 300 pages, and then the major book, which I'm still working on, will be about 500, 600 pages. But in the meantime, I have an online learning course. It was originally on the University of Reason, which was founded by the same fellow that founded Tragedy and Hope, which is Richard Grove, and it's a 12-hour course, 12-hour lectures, plus 4 hours of question and answer with the beta class. Because when I taught the class, we had, you know, people sit in on the class from the very beginning, and, you know, so we could see how it's going and what questions they had. And so 4 hours of question and answer, 2 free PDF downloads, and 9 PDF class handouts that cover all the subjects in the course. And so, like I said, this is where we want to go. Complete self-reliance and mutual support as a community. If you just want to start a lending circle or a small banking group or a co-op or homeschooling, we also do homeschooling. Our members teach their own kids. Nobody's sending their kids to drag queen story time, okay?
God, yeah.
We all look after each other's kids and things like that. You can do just that. Get some people together and say, okay, let's homeschool our kids. After all, that's how Montessori started. It was a community school. And of course, Montessori. Yeah. And Montessori now is famous throughout the world as being the best form of education available to K through 8 or something like that. So it's a better form of education. So if you don't want to buy guns, if you don't want to train, if you don't want to get a radio, at least form a community to homeschool your kids and start there. Now, that community that you form to homeschool your kids, when World War III happens, what do you think they're going to do? Who do you think they're going to turn to for help and support? The rest of the homeschool community. So that's...
Well, if all of you out there listening, some of you will have small groups of people in a semi-rural, certainly a non-urban area where you've got people of like mind politically, and that has to be a bedrock of this whole thing, then you can do this. How do they get in touch with that course, the online course?
I have a website. It's called Forming Communities, one word, formingcommunities.com. And I've got a lot of stuff up on that website. But the course, the online course, is one of them. Now, University of Reason was selling this course for $400. But I spoke to the producer. When we started the course, I said, listen, after 2 years, I want to take charge of the course myself. So you got 2 years to sell it. And then I'll sell it myself. And I'm only charging $95. So 75% off. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Great. All right. And the easy way to get there, again, give the website one more time.
Formingcommunities.com.
Okay. Real simple. Formingcommunities.com. Go take a look at it. If you're even just pondering this mildly, go look. See what you can learn. Stefan will be here again next month, hoping we'll all be here next month. In the meantime, there's still a tiny bit of time, so I'd go to look at Forming Communities tomorrow. Take some time on the weekend. Go look. Thank you, my friend. Great to talk with you,
thank
as always.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah,
right.
Thank you.
Take care. Be well. Talk soon.
You too, buddy.
Okay. All right. That's it for tonight on this Friday. Thank you for being here. It's been a very busy week, packed with information. So do enjoy and learn, and hopefully you can share some of this with other people as well. Take care. Talk soon. Prepare and beware. Have a good weekend.